calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, my friends, greetings, lovers, patriots, friends, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day. Today, actually, it was originally Peace Day. After the Great War, the war to end all wars, the armistice was signed at 11:11 a.m. And then in 1938, the name was changed to Armistice Day. And then in 1954, Dwight Eisenhower changed it to Veterans Day. And we will be talking about that later on in the program. However, first, our segment with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives in the history of that institution, representing the great state of Vermont. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org, his website. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. Our telephone number, by the way, 1-866-440-8466, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Bernie, the Swiftboat vets are after you. Do you mind my raising this topic? Bernie? Whoop. What happened?
Hello?
Yeah, Bernie?
Yeah, we lost you for a second.
Yeah, it was very, very strange. The light went weird. I'm going to lock this line down here. Do you mind my raising the Swiftboat vets issue for a second?
Well, before we get to the Swiftboat vets, let's get to the real vets. And today, as you indicated, was Veterans Day. And it is a day to remember the sacrifices made by so many people, including, you know, the folks who are over there in Iraq right now. One of the things I have to say, Tom, about Veterans Day that gets me a little bit upset is you hear a whole lot of speeches honoring the veterans, but if people knew what was going on in Washington, D.C. with regard to the inadequate appropriations going to our vets, they would be very, very disappointed. There is a coalition of veterans groups with the VAW and the DAV and many other veterans groups who have been fighting for years to make sure that we have a decent budget so that when our veterans get old, when they get sick, that we can take care of them. And it really upsets me very much that this administration and the Republican leadership would tell us how much they love the troops. They are able to find hundreds of billions of dollars for tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. But when the veterans organizations ask for $3.5 billion to adequately fund the VA so there aren't waiting lists for our veterans, so that they don't have to throw veterans off of VA healthcare eligibility, well, Tom, guess what? Somehow they can't come up with that money. And I am very worried that with a lot of these young men and women coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, studies indicate that the rate of post-traumatic stress disorder is very, very high, higher than even in Vietnam. And frankly, at this moment, we do not have the capability to adequately take care of those people. So today, when we talk about honoring veterans, I hope the President of the United States will do more than rhetoric. I hope that it will adequately fund the VA so that we, in fact, can take care of those people who put their lives on the line for this country.
Well, and in that regard, I understand that Congressman Steve Boyer, the Republican from Indiana, who Tom DeLay put on the House Veterans Affairs Committee to replace Chris Smith, the Republican from New Jersey, who is very vocal in favor of veterans' causes. He DeLay bounces Smith off, puts Boyer on, and this week Boyer announced that for the first time in 55 years, when the joint House-Senate committee receives testimony in March, these veterans groups will no longer be able to testify. The reason being that the White House submits their recommendations just before that, and these groups have been criticizing the White House's attempts to cut veterans programs.
Now, this is a huge issue. And what happened, I want every veteran, every American to understand this. Chris Smith is a very conservative Republican from New Jersey. Chris and I disagree on almost every issue. But Chris worked up the ladder, the seniority ladder, became chairman of the House Veterans Committee. And you know what? Chris is an honest guy. I disagree with him on a lot of other issues. But he really does defend veterans' rights. And in an almost unprecedented manner, the Republican leadership, DeLay and company, took Chris off not only the chairmanship of the committee, off of the whole committee. And you know what his crime was? His crime was that he actually believed that veterans should receive the benefits that they were promised. And they yanked them off, and they put this other guy on, who is really a spokesperson for the leadership. And as you've indicated, for the first time in decades, the veterans organizations will not be able to make their case before the committee. And the reason, of course, is that the veterans will point out, as they have year after year after year, that the VA budget is totally inadequate. That is the reality of how veterans are being treated in this country, in Washington, D.C., and people must understand that.
The Disabled American Veterans, a group that my grandfather was a member of, I remember as a child going up to Newego, Michigan, up and marching in the parade with Grandpa, and him, you know, with the flag, and they were selling the little red poppies and everything. Disabled American Veterans, he was a World War I vet. The official voice of America's service-connected disabled veterans say that this move is, quote, an insult to all who have fought, sacrificed, and died to defend the Constitution. The timing could not have been worse, end quote.
Well, and again, what you're going to hear today from all politicians in every state, oh, we love the veterans, we want to honor the veterans, and the reality is that they're turning in Washington, the Republican leadership, despite all of their flag-waving, they are turning their backs on veterans and treating them in a very, very shameful way. And when you talk about the money, remember, we're talking, the veterans organizations say that we need about $3.5 billion to adequately fund the VA. Is this a lot of money?
This is 3 days in Iraq.
That's the point. This is a tiny fraction of the tax breaks that have gone to millionaires and billionaires. So, Mr. President, stop telling us how much you love the troops and you love and respect the veterans. Put some action behind your words and treat those people with respect. We get calls in our office, Tom, from people who are in their 80s, people who fought in World War II, who want to be able to go into a VA hospital, but because now they make over $25,000 a year, they're quote-unquote too wealthy to get VA health care, despite the fact that they were promised that.
Yeah.
That is an outrage, and I hope all Americans understand that no matter what one's position is on this war in Iraq, and I certainly not only voted against the war, I helped lead the effort against the war, what we have got to do is keep our promises to those people who are really sacrificing and in many cases suffering. Tomorrow in Burlington we will be doing another funeral, in this case for a young man who was born and raised in the city of Burlington, Vermont, and that's, I believe, the 21st death that this small state has experienced in Iraq. So we know what suffering is about, and it is an outrage that in Washington the Republican leadership is more concerned about tax breaks for oil companies and for the wealthiest people in this country than for taking care of our veterans.
Bernie, David Sirota wrote a piece in on the Huffington blog, and it runs about four paragraphs. Do you mind if I just read this straight
up?
It's just straightforward, and you can respond to it or not if you'd like. But in a breathless, frightening, foaming-at-the-mouth diatribe on the right-wing fringe news site Newsmax, John O'Neill, the leader of the slanderous Swiftboat Veterans for Truth, said his group is targeting Vermont Independent Congressman Bernie Sanders for defeat in Vermont's upcoming U.S. Senate race. O'Neill's letter, not surprisingly, is filled with wild lies. The truth is, Sanders has been one of the most outspoken advocates for this nation's veterans. For instance, he led the long and lonely fight to force the U.S. government to address Gulf War syndrome instead of trying to sweep it under the rug. He has also fought tooth and nail against Republican efforts to slash veterans' health care funding. Clearly, the far right is eager to defeat Sanders because he's been such a tireless and effective advocate for progressive causes. And these conservative lunatics promise to stop at nothing to elect Republican Greg Park or Rich Tarrant. Tarrant is considered the front runner in the GOP primary, and he is already quite controversial. For instance, he is now being hounded by a new scandal involving his business dealings. Sanders' biggest challenge will be fundraising. Tarrant says he will spend up to $5 million of his own money in an effort to buy the race, money that will clearly be needed for him to hide his troublesome business record and flip-flopping on key issues. Sanders, meanwhile, refuses to take corporate PAC money. It will be up to the grassroots to support his candidacy, beat back the fringe right-wing assault, and put one of the true progressive champions in the Senate. Your website, Bernie.org, I think you actually posted John O'Neill's diatribe against you on your website, did you not? What are you going to do?
These guys
took down John Kerry.
Look, we know that our race is going to be targeted by all the extreme right-wing groups. I'm sure the Swiftboat people are not the only ones. And I think in their letter, they called me dangerous. Well, I accept that. From their perspective, I am dangerous because I am going to help lead the effort in the Senate against the Bush agenda and the agenda of Bill Frist and Tom DeLay, an agenda which day after day represents the wealthiest people in this country, the largest corporations, against the middle class and working families. So if these guys call me dangerous, I guess I take that as a badge of honor, and I am dangerous to what they stand for. But we understand that this stuff is coming. We understand that in the small state of Vermont, far more money is going to be spent than has ever been spent before in a campaign. The fellow who will likely be the Republican candidate is a fellow named Mr. Tarrant, who is, in fact, the wealthiest person in the state of Vermont, who will, he said, spend $5 million of his own money. So we're in for a fight, but I think at the end of the day, we're going to prevail.
Well, I certainly hope so. What can I say? It's check out Bernie.org for more information on that. I don't want to, you know, get too much into the partisan stuff of this. I know you don't either on this program. Let's just stick to the issues. If you'd like to talk to Bernie Sanders, 1-866-440-8466. The telephone number is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Lean on me. We are not strong.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our number 1-866-440-THOM. 1-866-440-8466. Tom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
How you doing, guys? I think what people need to understand is that the VA hospital situation is liable to get much, much worse before it gets better. A lot of the service men and women who have been maimed in Iraq are still technically active duty in a lot of cases. And when they start becoming discharged, the VA system is going to be inundated with new numbers of, incredibly expensive and difficult to manage cases. And that's all. On the corner from right now.
Well, Tom, let me absolutely agree with you. You're absolutely right. But let me add to that the fact that what initial studies indicate is that the rate of post-traumatic stress disorder among Iraqi veterans, those who are returning, is higher than it was in Vietnam. That means there are going to be a lot of problems and a lot of needs on behalf of those people that we're not able to deal with right now as well. So there's going to be a real push and stress within the VA system. It is very clear that they are inadequately funded, and we've got to get more money into that system to take care of these folks who are coming home.
Yeah, plus I understand, Bernie, that because the body armor is so much better now than it was during Vietnam, even though our troops didn't have it in the early days of this war, that we have a lot more troops coming back missing a leg or missing an arm who, had it been Vietnam, would be simply dead because their torsos are protected and their heads in some part are protected.
Exactly.
So we've got more wounded soldiers and more severely wounded soldiers.
Exactly. A lot of severe head injuries as well, and these guys are going to need a lot of care, and of course, we have to make sure that they get it.
Yeah, well said. George in Tacoma, Washington, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Congressman, I was wondering, since you're not taking any contributions from PACs or anything, are you relying strictly on the Internet for the bulk of your...
Well, the Internet, George, is one source of funding for our campaign. We do take individual contributions, of course, from people in Vermont and all over this country. We also take PAC money from non-corporate sources. Labor unions and workers' organizations, environmental groups, women's groups have been very supportive in our effort. But most of our funding for the campaign comes from small individual contributions.
Okay. Thanks a lot, George, for that call. Appreciate it. You can go to Bernie.org for more information on that. Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Bernie.
Hey,
Kenny. I just want to thank you, Mom, because it's refreshing to hear that you don't want the corporate money. I have a small business, and I'm from Maryland, and I know I'm going to be sending some money to you for your campaign, because this is what we need to go back to. We need to get out of the corporate pockets, because when they do something and you're taking corporate money from them, then you can't speak out against them.
Kenny, you're absolutely right. In a nutshell, and you hit it right on the head, the problem with what's going on in Washington right now is that you have a Congress and a White House essentially owned and controlled by large corporate interest. The reason that ExxonMobil was able to make almost $10 billion in profits last quarter and get corporate welfare from the taxpayers, or that we have a prescription drug Medicare bill, which was written by the pharmaceutical industry, or a bankruptcy bill written by the credit card companies, is precisely because these people make huge campaign contributions and control the people who head these committees. So Ken is absolutely right. We got to break our dependence on corporate money and go back to the people, and we need real campaign finance reform as well. But, Ken, you hit it right on the head.
And thank you, Ken, for that. Dennis in Hinesville, Georgia, you're live with Congressman Bernie Danger Sanders.
Hey, Bernie, it's Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say that, you know, on we really can need to get universal or national-type health care, and we can use some of the Republicans against ideas against them, like if we made this a national health care program or ran it under Medicare or however you wanted to do it, that we would be taking the burden off of big business so they wouldn't have to fund this and make them more competitive in the world. And one other quick point is that the Republicans are not pro-life. They're pro-birth and then anti-life by cutting the Medicaid, Medicare, food stamps, and all that other stuff. Your
all comments. Right. Dennis, you make two very good points. In terms of health care, let's reiterate what I hope every listener knows, that the United States of America is the only nation in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all citizens as a right of citizenship. Secondly, with 46 million Americans uninsured and even more underinsured, we spend twice as much per person on health care as any other country on earth. More and more people are becoming uninsured. And Dennis's point that this is a growing burden on the business community is absolutely right. We are increasingly uncompetitive with Canada and other countries by demanding that businesses provide health care, and in fact, fewer and fewer of them are doing that. Too much of a burden. My view is that we have to move toward a national health care program, single-payer system administered at the statewide level.
Why not simply make Medicare available to all Americans, Bernie?
Well, that is one approach that we're talking about, but I think we also need to have a system as cost-effective as we can.
So
and I would
states...
also, I would like to see the systems be administered at the statewide level rather than in Washington.
So if the states administer it, it's closer to home. They can keep an eye out for fraud,
exactly.
Keep the costs down, that kind of thing. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. It's 27 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you'd like to call in, our telephone number 1-866, toll-free across the United States, 1-866-440-THOM, 440-8466. 27 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowards.
Or Republicans. It's maybe dangerous for your health. And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Every week, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And great to be back with you, Bernie. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM, and Mary in Bedford, Texas on the line. Mary, you're live with Congressman Sanders. Oh, Mary just vanished from the line. Let's go to Danny in Spartansburg, South Carolina. Hey, Danny.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. Just a quick question. I was wondering if you could educate...
Let's just try that one more time. Hey, Danny. Continue. Try it again.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if Bernie, if you could tell us how you what the process is of corporate lobbying. How much who do they give the money to? Who do they want to talk to? Where does that money end up? Thank you.
Danny, that's a very good question, and I think people just don't appreciate the kinds of money that large corporations spend on the political process. I'll give you one example, probably. The most powerful lobby in Washington, more so even than the oil companies, is the pharmaceutical industry. At last count, they had at least 800 paid lobbyists, some Republicans, some Democrats, from all of the powerful law firms in Washington. And any time there's legislation that comes up dealing with the outrageously high cost of prescription drugs, when we're trying to lower drug prices in America, these guys are all over the place like locusts. They are hitting every congressional door. They do a lot of advertising. If you stand up to them, they're likely to send literature to every constituent in your district, put radio ads on, put newspaper ads on. Very, very powerful guy. Pharmaceutical industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbying, campaign contributions, advertising, and they have huge influence in the media as well. So these guys are very, very powerful, and they have unlimited amounts of money. And again, that speaks to the need for real campaign finance reform so that their influence is significantly diminished.
Steve in Provo, Utah, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hello?
Hello, Steve. You're live and on the air.
This is Steve.
In Provo, Utah. Yes, go ahead.
Right. Yes, I'm a retired physician, and I have worked in Veterans Administration hospitals in the past. And I wanted to make a comment about where we're at with the Veterans Administration Health Service, and I was interested in the congressman's observations on this. Over the years, I worked part-time there, mostly as a community commitment, a donation of my efforts. And in the process, I routinely was discouraged about the level of care that we were able to provide, the long waits for routine care, and the delays in hospitalization for people who needed it. And I have always felt that if we were to have abandoned the Veterans Administration healthcare system and just merged it into Medicare and handed the vets the equivalent of a Medicare card, that we'd be much better off with them going to the physician on the corner and the hospital down the road and acquiring their health care in a mainstream fashion. And I'd be interested in the congressman's comments on that regard.
Well, Steve, I agree with about three-quarters of what you said, but I don't agree, and I think most veterans don't agree. The truth is that veterans feel very strongly attached to the VA hospitals and are very feel, by and large, I mean, there are differences around the country. I think they feel good about the quality of care that they get when they're able to get it. Their concern is that many of the VA facilities are understaffed and that there are waiting lists and so forth. The reality is that VA provides good quality, cost-effective care, much more so than hospitals in the ordinary hospitals do. What I fear, in fact, is that one of the reasons that the Bush administration is underfunding the VA is they ultimately want to do away and privatize the VA healthcare system. And I think many veterans think that that is not a good idea, that they're going to lose the specialty care that many veterans need for the particular problems that veterans have. So I don't agree with you that we should, in a sense, disband the VA system. I think we should adequately fund it, and I think in doing so, you're going to get very good, cost-effective care for people who, in many cases, have special needs.
Thanks, Steve, for that call. Bill in Long Island, New York, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, gentlemen. This morning I heard on the Rachel Maddow show, and I'd like to have your opinion on this, which I think I know what it's going to be. Lindsey Graham introduced measures in the Senate to eliminate habeas corpus, and it was approved.
This for people in Guantanamo.
Right. She didn't go into it in whole effect. She just said that here Lindsey Graham introduced a measure in the Senate, and it was voted on and approved to eliminate the habeas corpus. Now, I'm not sure if she was referring to Guantanamo or not, but that's the only thing
yeah.
she made mention
yeah,
of.
This was a 49-44 vote, Bernie, in the Senate. Do you know?
Actually, I'm not familiar with it, but you know, my own view is that the United States is looking increasingly bad around the rest of the world in terms of how we treat our prisoners. And the point that people like Tom, like Senator McCain make when it comes to torturing is that if we advocate those policies, if we do away with Geneva Convention rights, then other countries can treat our POWs in exactly the same way. And we lose the kind of standing and respect that we have historically had in the world. So I think we have got to do a lot better job in making the world understand that we're treating prisoners in a way that we want our prisoners to be treated as well.
Otherwise, we're putting all of our own soldiers at risk.
We sure are, and that's people like McCain have made that point.
Yeah. Mary in Bedford, Texas, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Mary.
Yes, hi. I wanted to thank you, first of all, for all of your support for cash balance programs, all of your support, fighting against cash balance conversion on pension plans. And I was wondering if you would comment on two things that have happened in the news recently. Number one, the GAO report that came out recently that said that all workers get harmed by these conversions. And number two, secondly, if you could please inform the listening audience that their pensions are at risk, that H.R. 2830 just passed the House Ways and Means Committee this week that will legalize cash balance pension plans, and there are no worker protections in that legislation.
And legalize, Mary, age discrimination.
Yes, absolutely.
In that same bill. Now, let me just say a word on this, because Mary is right. This is an issue that we have been involved in quite a bit, and it stemmed from folks at IBM right a few miles away from my office here in Vermont who received an email one day essentially telling them that in some cases their pensions would be slashed by up to 50% by IBM moving from a defined pension benefit plan to a cash balance benefit plan. Cash balance is a complicated theory, but the bottom line is it is a disaster for older workers. And as Mary indicates, a recent GAO report indicated it is a worse program for all workers. One of the attacks that we're seeing on the middle class today, it's not only losing health care benefits, it's not only that our jobs are going to China, it's not only that the Bush administration refuses to raise the pathetic $5.15 minimum wage, it's not only the attacks on unions, the right for workers to be able to organize. Very importantly, and Mary is absolutely right, we're seeing a savage attack on pensions. Millions of workers have spent decades at their jobs expecting that when they retire, there will be a certain defined pension plan there. They know what it is, but they are under assault from corporations who want to pull the rug out under those plans, substantially cut back on pension benefits. And this is just an outrage and an enormously serious problem that the American people have got to understand, or else we're going to see a lot of people having retirements that are very, very different than they had planned and hoped to have.
Wayne in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Wayne, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, my question has to do with George Bush's use of the term war. And he says that we're at war, and yet Congress has not declared war. So that we have Halliburton in Iraq, we have private industry, we have so-called advisors who are really mercenaries, we have all the problems with Guantanamo, we have all of these difficulties. Why doesn't Congress declare war? Would that mean that we would have to pull Halliburton out and the advisors, and that all American resources would have to go to Iraq so that there would be enough weapons and armor and everything else? What is the breakdown between Bush saying war and we're not at war?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I understand that, Wayne, but the truth of the matter is that the Congress did vote, I did not vote for it, but a majority of members of the House and Senate voted to give the President the authority to go to war. Now, the question of why the Bush administration was so unprepared for what has, in fact, happened, why soldiers did not have the proper armor, why our Humvees did not have the proper armor, why some of the Bush people were expecting that this war would end in 2 weeks, and now 2.5 years later, we're seeing a record number of American losses there, billions of dollars being spent. So the real question is not only how did we get into this war, which we need a thorough investigation on, but we also have to understand why this administration was so unprepared for, in fact, what happened.
Yeah, maybe Ahmed Chalabi had something to do with that?
Could be.
Yeah, this guy running around Washington, D.C. today. And we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie.org, his website. Be sure to check it out. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I love leaves in the wind, pictures of my friends,
birds of the world and squirrels.
And welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. This program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS. Get the latest iPods, all things Macintosh, all things computer. You can also go to smalldog.com for more information. Let's go back to the phones, 1-866-440-8466. Steve in Eureka, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I thought it was a very ironic week where we had President Bush making a public statement that the U.S. military does not torture prisoners, when we've all seen the photos. At the same time, you have Vice President Cheney trying to push the Congress into legalizing torture. So I'm curious if Congressman Sanders, if the Democrats do take back the Congress next year's election, are they going to push for serious investigation and actually push for impeachment if that's what's called for? Are they going to do it?
Well, Steve, this is, I mean, I can't speak for the Democrats, but I think one of the outrages that is going on right now is the absolute lack of oversight, which is a constitutional responsibility of the Congress over the White House. You will remember, Steve, that when Clinton was president, every other day in the House or the Senate, there was another investigation. The guy couldn't go to the bathroom without being investigated. Think about all of the things that have happened in the Bush administration, and think of the number of investigations, serious investigations that have taken place, and the number is zero. I am on the House Government Reform Committee. That is our job, and we have not done it despite repeated requests to the chairman. So I think one of the things that the Republic, that the White House is very nervous about is that, in fact, if the Democrats regain control of either the House or the Senate, yes, I would be very surprised if there were not a whole lot of very serious investigations about a lot of issues, probably at the top of the list, how we got into Iraq in the first place, and the degree to which the president distorted intelligence information. It is a huge issue, which certainly has not been dealt with appropriately by the Congress.
Ken in Columbus, Ohio, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I'm sorry I missed the first half of the show. I was just listening to the speech from President Bush on TV, and what struck me was his newer approach of saying that his detractors are trying to rewrite history and say that everybody, and he's saying basically everybody agreed there were weapons of mass destruction before the war and everybody was on board with it. Well, I remember reading articles before we ever went to war, you know, saying there were doubts in the intelligence community, and I remember seeing the articles about Cheney you know, handpicking his own group of people to give him intelligence and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think somebody in Congress needs to be pointing this stuff out in public so that he doesn't get away with rewriting history himself.
No, that's right. The point is, there were a lot of people who believe that Saddam Hussein may have had weapons of mass destruction. A, that did not mean to say that people were prepared to wage a preemptive war against them. Second of all, what Bush and Cheney were telling us is that Iraq was engaged in building up a nuclear weapons program. And I don't think anyone else said that. And we all know about the aluminum tubes. We know about the so-called uranium that was coming from Niger. And those, both of those facts, quote-unquote facts, turned out to be not the case. Bush and Cheney were telling us about the supposed link between Iraq and Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And they used information that came from a prisoner that the CIA and the intelligence.
Yep, we just lost Bernie Sanders. David will be trying to get him back on. I'm not sure what happened here, but from time to time, you know, telephone lines fail, things crash, things go out of commission, as it were. It is Veterans Day, by the way. One of the things that Bernie was talking about is, and in fact, the weekend of Veterans Day here, was the House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman, Stephen Beyer. B-U-Y-E-R is how he spells his name, but he pronounces it Buyer. Never trust a guy who can't pronounce his own name. Okay, anyhow, the House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman, Stephen Buyer, has come out and said that no more will veteran service organizations like the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the Disabled American Veterans be able to testify before House Senate committees together. It's not going to happen. Okay, hang on just a second. We've got Congressman Sanders with us. Hey, Bernie.
Okay, another disconnect there.
Yeah, sorry about that. The phone lines are funky today.
I just want to conclude that no matter what Bush may say, we need an investigation as to how he distorted intelligence information, the degree to which the White House and the Vice President put a lot of pressure on the intelligence agencies to give them the information that, in fact, they wanted in order to go into this war. That's a huge issue, and the American people need to know the truth about it.
Okay, very quickly, Sherlyn in Savannah, Georgia, we have about a minute left. What's up?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi.
Tom, you had a guest on your show a couple months ago. His website was votelocalcontrol.org, and he was talking about how he can keep corporate money out of local governments. And I was wondering if there's a way that the populace can kind of rubber stamp this process and, like, try to, I guess, through a petition or whatever, try and get laws on the ballot to ban corporate money from local elections or something like that.
Bernie?
Well, that's a very good idea. And statewide election campaign law, campaign finance law, differs state by state. And there are some states that have gone pretty far, Arizona, Maine, are doing a very good job toward public funding of elections, and I think people should be paying attention in every state in the country as to how they could remove big money influence over elections.
Bernie, we've got about 20 seconds. Biggest issue coming up this week?
Well, we'll see whether the Republicans will be able to get the votes to bring forth a reconciliation bill, which will cut funding for food stamps, cut funding for education, cut funding for Medicaid, go after the most vulnerable people in this country, which is clearly an outrage.
Definitely. Well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org. Check out the website. Thanks so much for being with us, Bernie.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Much appreciated. It's 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, to the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States, the Tom Hartman radio program. That's me. It's 6 minutes after the hour. You know, on the right, the folks on the right are continually saying, Republicans, cons, whatever, they're always saying, and for that matter, the mass media, they're always saying, these people on the left, when they're talking about people like Hillary Clinton, or even Paul Wellstone. I mean, you know, it's even Bernie Sanders, whatever, they say, these people on the left are, and what I've been saying for a long, long time is, I'm sorry, there, for all practical purposes in the United States, there is no left. The left was the old Communist Party of the United States of America, the Socialist Workers' Party. My grandfather, by the way, was a socialist. I should toss this in. My father is a Republican. And so I lived through the whipsaws of the early years. There is no left, for all practical purposes, left in the United States. I mean, there's still a few people out there crusading on those sides, but these politicians, the Democrats by and large, they're not the left, they're the middle. They're, you know, and most of the positions I take on this program, I'm in favor of free enterprise, for example, are not the left, we're the middle. And it's been greeted with some skepticism, so I thought we'd get the real left on the program, and let's have a conversation. Libero Della Piana is with us, with the Communist Party of the United States of America. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I'm pleased to have you on here. Libero, am I pronouncing it right?
It's Libero.
Libero.
Yes.
Libero. Great. Libero, tell me, what would America look like if the communists were in charge?
Well, we believe in a society where working people can make the important decisions over their lives. And, you know, we think that that's a socialist system, a system where the vast majority of people in this country who work for a living, who have to work for a living, have political and economic control of things. And, you know, that's the essence of what we're looking for, the essence of the society we'd like to see.
Well, it sounds nice, but, and I think a lot of us who read Das Kapital and who read the Communist Manifesto, you know, in college and or just, you know, for out of, you know, curiosity or whatever, seeking, get it that it's about empowering the workers. But when you look at the way communism has played out in a variety of countries around the world, it hasn't quite worked out to nationalize industries. How do you, are you suggesting, for example, that the government should own all industry, the means of production and distribution, which is what specifically Karl Marx called for?
We're not calling for the ownership of all means of production, but the key means of production. I think it's important to remember that no socialist society has had 100% public control of the means of production of, you know, those industries and different aspects of the economy. But I think the key...
Well, hang on just a second here. I visited the Soviet Union when it was the Soviet Union. I visited East Berlin when it was East Berlin. I've worked in Russia both before and after. Now that it's Russia, as far as I could tell, when I was there back when it was the Soviet Union, everything was owned by the government. Everybody was an employee of the government, and frankly, everybody was terrified of the government.
Well, I don't think it's true. I mean, there's a lot of economic analysis.
I saw it with my own eyes.
Sure. Well, I think that the vast majority of the industries and productive capacity was owned by the government. But there was always farm collectives, collaboratives, and even individual ownership in the Soviet Union, even at the height. And I think that, you know, that's an important thing to remember. That, you know,
so are you holding up the Soviet Union as an ideal?
No, I don't think we look to any society as the ideal. I think the Soviet Union and the Socialist Revolution in 1917 was an important breakthrough in humanity. I think that it opened up a whole realm of democratic and economic gains around the world, not just in the socialist world, but in the non-aligned countries and in the third world, et cetera. So, you know, we're not looking to any country as a model. We believe that socialism in the U.S. is going to look very different from anywhere else.
Libero della Piana of the Communist Party of the United States of America, CPUSA.org is the website. It strikes me that the only place where I've seen true socialism or true communism, you know, in the communalism actually work is, you know, on kibbutz farms in Israel,
mm-hmm.
and small communes here in the United States back in the 60s and 70s, although most of them are no longer intact, so you can't really say that those worked. And I'm guessing you may be familiar with the research about, you know, 150 people. Malcolm Dowell talks about it in his book The Tipping Point, where this fellow found out that every society of mammals organizes itself into groups based on the size of its brain. So, you know, prairie dogs will have a certain number of animals in a community, and rabbits a certain number of animals in a community. And when you graph it at humans, you get about 150 people. And historically, tribes, if you look at indigenous and aboriginal tribes all around the world, at 150 people typically is when they start breaking into individual clans. And the Mormons split up into groups of 150 in the early days. There's just, you know, no shortage of historical examples of this, that beyond 150, we can't keep track of everybody. And it seems to me that, you know, communism, communal ownership of everything and communal administration of everything is a cool idea if you have 150 people or less, because everybody knows everybody and nobody is going to, you know, be able to, you know, rise up and basically take over. But when you get larger groups than that, then it's possible for the sociopaths among us to emerge, which I believe is very much what I was seeing when I was in East Berlin and when I was in the Soviet Union. How do you make that transition? How are you suggesting, or are you suggesting, that America should make that transition?
Well, we believe that really it's in the course of struggle for democratic rights, for economic equality, for social equality, that in the course of those struggles that people and the mass movements, the labor movement first and foremost, and the women's movement, the civil rights movement, they gain greater strength and confidence in their abilities to change society.
But none of those movements were communist.
No, but
the communist struggle in Russia was a violent. I mean, you know, the socialist revolution was.
No, that first of all, we're not looking for a society that only communists have a say. We're looking for a society where working people have a say as a whole, and we think that our party is an important part of that. But certainly, we believe in a multi-party system, in a system that represents the huge breadth and diversity of our country and our working class, and that. The revolution, you know, changing the society in a fundamental way, basically, we believe can be a peaceful one, and we strive for
how?
A peaceful one, because if the majority of people decide that they want to change things in that way, it's up to them.
That's what we've done. I mean, you have the majority of the people saying, hey, we'd like Social Security, and so we get Social Security. And you've had Republicans back in 1935, 36, when Social Security was passed, saying, wait a minute, this is communism or this is socialism. I mean, they're still saying it to this day. They're trying to take apart Social Security. So are you saying that the Republicans are right, that that is what you're talking about? Or are you talking about, you know, it seems that my understanding of you know, my reading of Marx, anyway, is that it would be a much different and more sweeping change in society than anything like Social Security.
It will, but I think that, you know, gains like Social Security are important part of building that confidence and building the strength of the mass movement in order to...
But what happens to the person who wants to start their own business, who wants to actually own their own business and grow it? Are you suggesting that should be disallowed?
No, absolutely. I think that there is an important role for small business. I think that a socialist society would, for instance, nationalize healthcare, would nationalize the mines and the natural resources.
Nationalize the manufacture of clothing?
No, I don't believe that that is an essential or primary means of production. I think that it's up to the people to figure out what to do about, you know, large industries such as, clothing manufacturing.
Right, so we only have about a half a minute left.
Sure.
Libero della Piana, the CPSA, it sounds like you're advocating actually something more like what is happening in Venezuela, what Hugo Chavez is doing, than what, for example, Castro has done in Cuba.
Well, I think that we are very much in admiration of both societies, and we look to the lessons, both positive and negative, from Venezuela and Cuba, and we think that Socialism USA will advance our democratic traditions in this country. So we're fighting for it today, and we'll be here for the future.
Fascinating. Libero della Piana, CPUSA.org, the Communist Party of the United States. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. It's 16 and a half minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and I keep an old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen and I always carry a purse. I've got eyes like a bat and my feet are flat and my asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school and I'm a-working in a defense plant.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, I mean, that's the course that a lot of folks decided to take during the Vietnam War, was bailing out. Dick Cheney said he had other priorities. George Bush had his father pull some strings, and he got into the Champaign unit of the Texas Air National Guard, and then didn't even show up for a year, where he knew that he wouldn't be going to Vietnam. So, yeah. On the other hand, today, Veterans Day, on 11-11, at 11 minutes after the 11th hour, on the 11th day of the 11th month, President Woodrow Wilson and others got together to sign the armistice to end the war, to end all wars, World War I. It was called Peace Day. It was declared Peace Day in 1918 in the United States, and it was in fact today in the United Kingdom. There was a moment of silence. It's estimated as many as 50 million people observed a moment of silence today at 11:11 a.m. in honor of Peace Day around the world. 1938, we changed the name from Peace Day to Armistice Day. 1954, we changed the name from Armistice Day to Veterans Day. And in fact, it was Dwight Eisenhower who changed the name. Dwight Eisenhower, whose campaign commercials were about how he could work with European leaders, and he was in favor of peace. The Republican president. No, I kid you not. I'm dead serious here, you know.
He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower. A paid film.
There you go. Vote for peace, vote for Eisenhower. And what did Eisenhower have to say about this? And actually, before I get to Eisenhower, what he had to say about peace, I just wanted to comment. Thank you. Just wanted to comment on our last guest, the Communist Party of the United States. It seems has been taken over by centrists. I don't get it. It's not the old Communist Party that I thought it was. Apparently. Gee, let's not nationalize everything, only essential industries, kind of moving to the middle. Interesting. Anyhow, so we've been discussing that in the chat room. You want to drop into the chat room, go to tomhartman.com. Got some serious old communists there. And also discussion there of free dinners for veterans today. David is trying to check it out and find out if it's actually real. If so, we'll announce it on the air. You're looking at that, right, David? Yeah, indeed. Okay, cool. Back here to Dwight Eisenhower, and then we'll be taking your calls. Dwight Eisenhower on America's Prayer for Peace. This is from his farewell address in 1961, January of 1961, as he's turning over the reins of power to Jack Kennedy.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals.
Now he gets to America's Prayer. And just imagine if a politician was to say this today, all, you know, Tom DeLay and all these guys, they'd foam at the mouth crowd, they'd be going, it's a commie pinko liberal, he's talking about peace, he's talking about the poor, he's talking about those who are, how dare he?
To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations,
what? All faiths? All nations? What about those nasty Muslims? We can't have that. With the right wing is foaming now at the ghost of Eisenhower.
May have their great human needs satisfied.
What? Satisfy their needs? Sounds like communism.
That those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full. That all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love.
By the binding force of mutual respect and love. This was probably the most popular Republican president in the history of the United States, with the possible exception, with the definite exception of Abraham Lincoln, Dwight Eisenhower. I got to say to the Republicans listening, please take back your party. You got loonies and crackpots and crazies who have taken over your party. You got the Tom DeLays and the Bill Frists and the George W. Bushes and the Dick Cheneys. They want to torture people. They want to lock people up without giving them access to the courts. They want to say, you know what, the poor among us, screw the poor. And please go back to Dwight Eisenhower, Republicans. And let's respect our veterans once again. veterans like Dwight Eisenhower, people who actually saw war and said, hey, wait a minute, a higher value than war is peace. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of.
And welcome back, my friends. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466, the telephone number here on the True People's Radio. George Bush giving a speech this morning, forcefully attacking critics of his strategy in Iraq. He's going back to Nixon's techniques. The Associated Press, the president accused his critics of trying to rewrite history and said they are undercutting U.S. forces on the front lines. How dare you criticize Bush, because that's going to harm our soldiers fighting. Just like anybody criticizing Nixon was harming our soldiers. Come on. We're fighting for democracy, right? What do we want other nations to say? Oh, we're gonna turn Iraq into a democracy. By the way, guys, in a democracy, whatever your government does, you don't criticize it. I think Teddy Roosevelt would have had a few words to say about that. Leslie in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Leslie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, what's up?
I just have a statement to make.
Okay.
I have three of my family members in the armed forces at this time. Two of them have served at least two tours in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And the consensus there is that as soon as they can get out of the military, they're gone. And these are members that want to make it a life service. And now they want nothing else to do with it. And I have two boys, ages 17 and 18, and if they implement the draft, I'm going to send my children to Canada, and I am a 100% disabled veteran. And I am one that gets goosebumps when the national anthem is played, but I do not like the way the country is being run at this time, and I don't like Bush or his policies, and I feel he's destroying our country. And I want to know what your opinion is on what you feel is going to happen when they bring the troops home and they allow these people to come home and get out of the service when their time is up.
Yeah. Well, you've identified a number of things, Leslie, and these are really very, very serious issues. The fact that the morale in our armed forces right now is falling through the floor, it should be a warning signal to everybody. I mean, people on the front lines, they know what's going on. And
yeah, they do.
Yeah, and you try to do your best in any job, particularly in a job like being in the military. But you know, when you've got a guy like Bush, you know, and chicken hawks like Cheney and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Feith, you know, line us into a war, and then basically, you know, and then crooks like Chalabi being the ones that we're putting into power, it just has to be incredibly demoralizing.
Well, I don't know if the American public is aware that there's only one member of Congress that has one family member serving
in
the armed forces.
The other thing
you know, and Bush really torques my Twinkies when he says, I'm willing to sacrifice. He's
right.
Not sacrificing snot.
Yeah, well said, Leslie. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's all I have to say, and thank you so much for hearing me out.
You're welcome. And well said. Well said. I appreciate it. And in fact, if Bush really wants to put his money where his mouth is, why doesn't he send his daughters over there? Let them join up. But no, that's not what he's going to be doing. He's saying, The Democrats all knew that there was a problem. Well, actually, the majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives did not vote to give Bush the authority to use force in Iraq. The majority of Democrats in the Senate did, but not in the House of Representatives, number one. And number two, when he says, well, all the Democrats thought that there were a risk there. Well, those who thought it because you told them, George. What he's essentially saying is, well, the majority of the Democrats believed my lies. That's essentially what he's saying. And I think we need to reframe this stuff. Jessica in Washington, D.C. Hey, Jessica, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom. I just thought you might get a kick out of this little bit here that I just caught wind of. I was very upset when I realized that 75% of the people who voted on Tuesday in Texas passed a constitutional amendment to the state constitution to ban gay marriage. In the language, they actually managed to ban all marriage.
That's my understanding. I reported that yesterday. It was just one of those little kind of flying by. Oh, also in the news. Do you live in what? The message I have here on the screen is that you're in Washington D.C. Is that
yeah,
where you're calling from?
Here.
Oh, I see. Okay. Have you talked?
I passed my logic exams with 100, and I'm pretty sure that works out with, you know, if something is identical to marriage, then it is marriage. And it really,
right.
I mean, I just can't wait for some straight couple to move to Texas and file suit.
And discover that they're no longer married.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard from any of your friends or relatives in Texas about anybody doing anything about this? Are there any challenges to this?
Not so far, but my dad's getting married this December, and I think he's the kind of guy who might be willing to do something about it. I don't know if it'll work for a marriage that's done after the passing of that constitutional amendment, but
yeah, or maybe,
I'll find
maybe
somebody, and I got an aspiring lawyer friend here at Georgetown who might take the case.
Okay, great. Well, good on you, Jessica. Keep it up. Keep it up. Thanks for calling and alerting us to that. I appreciate it, and good to hear from you. It's what a hoot. What a hoot. And just imagine if Texas voters, just unmarried, everybody in Texas who's married. So maybe Jessica's dad's going to have to move to Louisiana in order to get married. Stranger things have happened. Massey in Seattle. Hey, Massey, welcome to the program.
Massey?
In Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, hello? Yeah.
Hey, you are live and on the air. You are. Oh. Don't listen to your radio, listen to your telephone.
Oh, okay. What I would like to know, Tom, is, you know, the word moratorium, you don't seem to hear that very much. And I was wondering if the Democrats or the honest-hearted Republicans could put some moratoriums on some of this spending that's going on in Washington, D.C.
Spending would you like to have paused with a moratorium?
Huh?
Which particular spending would you like them to pause?
Well, wages, you know, the wages for the politicians there, and Bush himself, and some other kinds of wild spending that Halliburton's doing and stuff like that via the government.
That's a pretty good list, Massey.
Huh?
That's a pretty good list.
Well, yeah, I've got some more, but that was two that came to mind. And what's going to happen to George and Pickles? Was her name?
Yeah, yeah, Laura. Yeah, Pickles. Yep.
When what about their marriage? And what about DeLay's marriage if he's married?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because they're all maintaining legal residence in Texas. In fact, I think George Sr. has been maintaining legal residence in Texas. He certainly did throughout his presidency, simply
so
by keeping an apartment there.
So does that mean that their marriages aren't valid?
It may well. We'll have to look into that. Massey, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Jerry in Science Hill, Kentucky. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program.
Well, congratulations on an excellent show.
Thank you, Jerry. Got to speak up a little bit if you can.
Okay, I'll try and shout a little bit more and keep the earphone away from my ear.
Okay.
You were talking a little earlier about Dwight Eisenhower. He gave us another pearl of wisdom, which I believe is really underlying why we're in Iraq. He said, beware of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah. He said it in a very articulate fashion. Very, very straightforward, just absolute stand-up, speak out. So you think this is the cause of the problem?
Oh, I think it's the cause of the problem, and I think, you know, the military-industrial complex succeeded in using electronic computers made by Diebold to count election results in Florida and Ohio in 2000. And for the first time, the exit polls didn't agree with the counted votes.
Well, that's certainly what Mark Crispin Miller is saying in his new book, Fooled Again. Here, by the way, is Dwight Eisenhower on this issue.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Where are the real Republicans when you need them,
Jerry?
Well,
you know, they're working for Diebold. They're working for Halliburton.
No, those are not real Republicans.
$11 billion in Iraq to Halliburton.
Yeah, those are not real Republicans. I'm telling you, the real Eisenhower was a real Republican. Where are the Republicans?
I have no idea. All I see
are corporatists. It's they're all gone. Jerry, thanks for the call and thanks for raising the issue. It's well said. Brian in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, awesome to talk to you as always. Well, I think the military-industrial complex also took down the trade towers. We've talked about this before, but now just yesterday. A Brigham Young University physics professor, his name is Stephen E. Jones, he came out and he's basically saying the same thing that I've been saying for a while, and a lot of other people, for that fact, Alex Jones and a bunch of others, that these towers in no way, shape, or form, they may have been hit by airplanes, but that was only a distraction. There's no way physically that they came down due to the fire, especially Building 7, and I think that this really needs to be investigated big time.
Brian, I've read the book, I've seen the movies, and I still don't understand. Forgive me if I'm really just dumb, what would be the benefit to anybody other than the guy who owned them for getting the insurance money? You think that that's what it was all about?
Well, I mean, it's obviously a huge multifaceted issue, and I mean, Larry Silverstein getting billions of dollars in insurance is one of those issues, but also, again, it gave them the new Pearl Harbor in order to go over to Iraq.
But they would have had that even with just the airplanes there. They would have had hundreds of people dead.
Yeah, but there was also tons of asbestos in those buildings, and they couldn't get rid of those buildings. They were losing tons and tons of money because renters didn't want to rent.
So we're back to Larry Silver.
Well, that's just, again, one of the bigger issues.
Yeah, interesting. Brian, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks, Tom.
These are the things we need to keep percolating. Keep the discussion going. Maybe someday all the truth will come out. 46 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Ninth Ward's flooded, call Halliburton. No electric power and the people are hurting. Call up the White House, power to spare. But don't bother FEMA, there's a brownout there. Get out of the way, hurricane's coming. Don't look back, just get to running. Big winds are coming and the Mideast are cooking. And old George Bush just standing there looking.
And welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. I'm Tom Hartman. Tom in Minneapolis on the line with us. Our phone number, 866-440-THOM, 440-8466. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to touch upon this reframing issue and language. You brought up a point on that. Today on Bush's speech, he keeps saying the word freedom, never says democracy. Always the word freedom, and we know why he does that, because the meme, democracy sounds like the Democratic Party, and freedom sounds like free markets, and so they keep hammering that sucker away. And then what you said, which is so telling, they always say that, well, the Democrats believe there were WMDs, and the Democrats never respond by saying, yeah, we believed your lie, just like you said.
Yeah, well, actually, quite a few Democrats have said that. It just doesn't get particularly well publicized.
Okay.
You know, I've seen several Democrats coming out and say that. In fact, there's an article in the Nation. I got a thing on this morning.
Mm-hmm.
John Edwards has now come out and said essentially that.
Thank God.
He thinks that a vote. I believe he voted for authorizing the president to go to war. But whether he voted for it or not, frankly, I don't remember. But in this article in the Nation, which just broke today on their website, it's not in the. It'll be in print probably next week. John Edwards comes out and says that he made a mistake and that, knowing what he knows now, Yeah, essentially. And I think a lot of Democrats are saying this, and I've heard several of them on various talk shows say it, you know, on like Chris Matthews' show and stuff like that. You know, they'll say it, and it just kind of slides by, never gets reported, never gets picked up. It's just a very occasional,
right.
Well, yeah, of course, you know, we thought there were weapons of mass destruction because we were listening to the Bush administration. They were
right.
telling us that.
I mean,
you know, of course we thought that.
And why don't they pick up, I don't know why, you know, he always, it's so obvious, using the word freedom, never democracy. Because they don't believe in it. We know that. But why doesn't the journalist pick up on that? You know, it's like, wait, why are you
afraid
of that word?
Because that's nuance, Tom, and most journalists don't do nuance.
Right.
You're talking fairly subtle stuff here, and that's the stuff that flies below the radar.
And here's a good one. We should say Senator Clinton. Never say Hillary. That's their meme. Our meme is Senator Clinton, the word Clinton. Clinton. People like that name because of the memories it brings back of the, you know, the prosperous times. We say Hillary. That's their meme. Hillary care, blah, blah, blah. No, Clinton, yeah. Senator Clinton.
Yeah. Okay. And by the way, I just have to say, you know, I am very much undecided, shall we say, about Hillary Clinton.
No, I'm just saying
but,
the name.
But I absolutely know that if she was the Democratic candidate, I would work for her and vote for her, although I hope she isn't the Democratic candidate, because I hope somebody far more progressive than she is because of her affiliation with the DLC.
Even if she isn't the candidate, I'm saying the name Clinton evokes good times.
I see. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We
yeah.
By say and large. Hillary. That's their yeah. Limbaugh meme. Hillary care.
Yeah.
All that crap.
There you
right?
go. Yeah. Yep. Well said, Tom. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you, Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I love your show. This is my first time calling, but
thank you.
Yeah, and it's a welcome in this vast wasteland of radio to have a show that devotes more of its time to light rather than heat. You know.
Yeah. Well, WPTT there in Pittsburgh is doing a great job, and we're
yeah.
very pleased to be on the air with you.
Yeah. Already noted it, but there was something else Bush did. He did it again today in his speech. He alluded to the criticism that the invasion and occupation may have actually exacerbated the instability in the region and even fostered a climate, you know, that served as a kind of a breeding ground for insurgency. But to refute it, he did it the same way, conflating the two events. He said, "We were not in Iraq on September 11, 2001.
Right, and there was no reason for us to be in Iraq after September 11, 2001. I think it's amazing that they're now, you know, saying with some apparently reasonable amount of certainty that the people who blew up the bombs, the suicide bombers in Jordan a couple of days ago, were Iraqis. There had never been a suicide bombing in the history of Iraq until we showed up. And this is exactly what Hosni Mubarak predicted, the president of Egypt. He begged George W. Bush, as did many of the Arab leaders in the Middle East, not to invade Iraq, because he said, if you invade Iraq, you'll produce either 100 or 1,000, I forget
exactly.
what the exact quote was, Osama bin Laden's.
And that, you know, thus does our president. He continues to conflate the two events, not so subtly, it's so transparently obvious, and this is a distorted presentation of the truth that he, as you say, in the Orwellian sense of repetition, I have to keep repeating these things in order to catapult.
Yeah, well, it's... Yeah, that's right. We got to catapult the propaganda. But it's not just Orwellian. I mean, this is Goebbelian. You know, this is big lie stuff. You know, Goebbels said, you know, the big lie will be believed if it's repeated over and over and over again, and if it's sufficiently audacious. It has to be a truly big lie. It's so big that people would say, hey, he couldn't say that unless it was true. I mean, that's a huge thing to say.
Right.
And
this transcends Orwell in that sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. it's right all the way to Joseph Goebbels. Amazing. Thanks a lot, Jim. Good
sure
to hear from
you.
This is and now Alito, by the way, the Alito confirmation. Maybe Alito's in a little bit of trouble. It comes out that he was making rulings that conflicted with his own interests, shall we say, after he had said in sworn testimony and for his confirmation hearings that he would not do that. And then they asked him about it, and he tries to cover it up. He says, oh, well, I didn't do that, when in fact he did do that. We'll see how long he lasts. It's incredible. These guys, they're all imploding. Well, that's what happens when you get a bunch of corrupt cronies running the government. People who, by the way, don't even believe in government. They just believe in looting it. It's a tragedy for America. And thankfully, America's waking up. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program, the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And dare to say, no, I don't think so. Is General Motors a person? GM in a little bit of trouble. Is Diebold a person? Well, speaking of Diebold, Bob Fitrakis is with us, freepress.org, his website. Just spelled just like it sounds, F-R-E-E-P-R-E-S-S.org. And Bob, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Bob, one of the tireless campaigners for honest and open elections in the United States, a person who has sued Ken Blackwell and had Ken Blackwell kick back at you, if I may say. Is that an accurate depiction?
Sure. Ken Blackwell wanted me sanctioned, wanted my law license pulled, and wanted me fined personally for daring to challenge the election results.
Speaking of the election results, Ohio just had an election Tuesday this last week here, and there were several issues 2, 3, and 4, apparently, on the ballot that would have reformed Ohio's electoral processes. And it seems that the polls all showed that these things passed overwhelmingly, but the voting machines showed that they failed?
Well, the dispatch polls indicated that...
First of all, what's a dispatch poll?
The dispatch, the Columbus Dispatch, is sort of the gold standard of Ohio polling. In the 20 years I've been in the state, they've only fallen outside of the margin of error once by a few percentage points. Generally, they're deadly accurate. It's the Columbus Dispatch newspaper, which is Republican editorial policy, but incredibly great pollers.
Okay. And so they did polling on these election reform ballot measures.
Yeah, they polled over 1,800 people, which is more than a national poll, and plus or minus 2.5. And they found that issues 2 and 3 were passing rather easily, with 59% supporting it, 9% undecided, and 61% actually for issue 3, with about 14% undecided. They found that two other issues, one was a toss-up, could go either way, and issue 4, which was attacking gerrymandering, was actually going down to defeat, but not by that much, maybe by 14 points. And, of course, what happened on Election Day is really those of you who are familiar with political science, particularly 101, the literary digest that predicted Alf Landon was going to win over FDR before there was scientific polling. Mm-hmm. These election results are actually much, much worse. That issue 3, which was reduced amount of money from $10,000 to $2,000 per individual in Ohio, which the dispatch predicted that 61% of the people were supporting with about 14% undecided.
Now, this would have reduced the amount of money that you could give as a campaign contribution from $10,000 to $2,000. So presumably there's only about 0.1% of the electorate of Ohio who would even have an interest in giving more than $2,000.
I'm sure that is the law which inspired it. If you have a family of four with two kids over the age of 7 can give up to $40,000, both in the primary and the general election. So that's
currently
$80,000 for one family.
Wow. So this was going to be reduced from $10,000 down to $2,000 per person in a family. And 61% of the people in the state supported this law.
We're supporting it as of Thursday when the poll was in was completed. And apparently, if you're to believe the election results, which I don't as a PhD in political science, apparently 100% of the undecided voted against the reducing of money. And even more shockingly, they want you to believe 29% of the supporters defected in a five-day period.
Now, let's just get this clear. The 61% of the people in the poll said they supported this.
Right.
And it was defeated by what percentage?
32% of the people supported it. 68% supposedly voted against it.
Okay, so if just a couple of days before the election, 61% of the people said they supported it, and a fair number of people said they weren't sure, and just after the election, 68% voted no, it sounds to me like the vote was flipped.
No, precisely, because there's 14% undecided. Most likely the undecided would have broke for the reform. It looks very, very much similar to what happened with Florida, where the Democrats all voted for Bush and apparently the Republicans all voted for the Democrats, where essentially, and even more interesting, this corresponds with in 41 counties have just introduced Diebold e-voting machines, personally negotiated by J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Republican candidate for governor and, of course, the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign.
Now, this is really pretty amazing, Bob Fitrakis, freepress.org, your website. If you have three ballot measures, you have three ballot measures where you have good, solid polling done that shows a clear majority
of
people.
The gold standard. I mean, the Dispatch is legendary.
Yeah, and some of the best polling actually in the United States. And they are saying that, you know, 61%, 58%, whatever. They're saying a certain percentage of people are going to vote for this. And
right.
The exact same percentage, more or less, I mean, when you figure in what you would expect to come out of the undecideds, for all practical purposes, the exact same percentage end up voting the opposite way. On all of these ballot measures, it seems, it looks to, from what I'm reading here, there was a series of these ballot measures. That was just issue three.
Sure, issue two as well, where they showed 59% supporting it, and it's if it was flipped.
Yeah. Is there no discussion in the state of Ohio of what happened?
Well, you know, it's if you discuss it, you've actually got to deal with a lot of other issues, which I've been researching. In the Democratic city of Dayton, they lost 187 memory cards on the machines, and they didn't turn up until the wee hours of the morning. None of the protocol to secure the memory cards was correct, and 171% were lost for hours in a bag that later turned up. Toledo, there was similar problems with the memory cards, and in some of the rural counties were getting clippings in. They had to go back in with flashlights because they forgot the memory cards. So there was a massive, massive problem. Each of these memory cards, on average, has about 1,000 votes on it, potentially, some more, some less, depending.
So 171 memory cards, 171,000 votes, more or less.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's interesting is that the memory cards were lost primarily in Dayton and in Toledo, where there was large voter turnout, because there were mayoral elections going on in those cities.
Now, at the top of the ballot, where you had the mayoral elections, or where you had, House or Senate or whatever, I mean, where you had major, actual candidates going against each other, did those elections seem to be flipped from the outcome, or was it just these ballot measures that would have cleaned up electronic voting?
Well, initially they seemed to be within the margin of error. The Toledo one is in question, with a far more conservative pro-corporate guy seems to have more votes than expected. But here's the odd one. Issue one on the ballot dealt with a third frontier bonding for high-tech industries. Now, that was supported by the Republicans, put on by Governor Bob Taft, who, by the way, is the most unpopular governor in America, according to polls, with only a
15% support
approval rating, right?
Yeah.
Well, that issue, the Dispatch predicted, would get 53% of the vote. The vote that came in was 53.7. So, as usual, they were deadly accurate with the one issue that was supported statewide by the Republicans.
But the three issues that the Republicans opposed,
massively, inconceivably outside the margin of error.
Or they were just the exact opposite of the exact opposite of what the vote was.
Mm-hmm.
Again, is this being discussed in the major newspapers, radio stations, TV stations in the state of Ohio?
They've yet failed to report on the GAO report that showed how vulnerable all these machines are and how easily they are hacked.
Yeah, that made none of the national media. But I mean, in Ohio, is nobody discussing the fact that it looks like these three issues were flipped by the electronic machines?
Now, what I found today buried on, page C7 down at the bottom was sort of a little explanation, Dispatch calls two of four issues correct. One was a toss-up. And they kind of said, some things could have intervened. This is what we call pulling a Matosky.
It's incredible. You still there, Bob?
What?
Yeah, you still there?
Yeah, I'm there. This is sort of like, it's interesting because what they may say is, well, the Christian Coalition passed out cards against it. But even more curious, they passed out cards against issue one because it was going to give money to biotech companies that are engaged, of course, in stem cell research, and they see as pro-abortion. So if any of them should have been impacted by some Christian Coalition cards, it should have been issue one and not issues two, three, four, five.
But that was
five.
The only one that the Republicans supported, and that was the only one where the voting machines agreed with the polls.
Correct.
Incredible. Bob Fitrakis, freepress.org for more information. Thanks for being with us today, Bob.
All right, glad to be here.
Much appreciated. 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
The machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day because we bought the election and it better go our way. And on election night, we'll sit back and glow. The billionaires don't want you to vote.
Don't vote.
If you're happy with George Bush in charge,
don't vote.
If you want to keep us living large,
don't vote.
Do you really want to rock the boat?
Don't vote.
Hey, the billionaires don't want you to vote.
Ah, yes, it's the billionaires for Bush. I'm just amazed about this results in Ohio. I mean, we had people calling us on Tuesday and Wednesday going, how come these things went down to defeat in Ohio? And we had a caller who called from Ohio saying, you know, well, it looked a little complicated to me. And I wonder if that I'm wondering now in retrospect if that caller was a plant. You know, throw us off the trailers. This is just incredible. By the way, Nick sends me an email. He says, I'm a loyal listener. Bush is in Pennsylvania today. I'm concerned. I'm wondering whether or not chicken hawks can carry avian flu. Good one on you, Nick. 1-866-889. I'm sorry. That's our old phone number. 1-866-440-8466. 866-440-THOMR. Telephone number, Jesse in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to bring up the primetime episode last night. I don't know if you saw it or any of your listeners saw it about Richmond.
I didn't. I'm sorry. I missed it. I think I was asleep by then.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't see it either, but maybe one of your callers can fill us in. But I do know the gist is that they're starting to feature politicians who talk out of two sides of their mouth. Well, here Rick Santorum, who's against ambulance chasers, the most, you know, his wife sued a chiropractor for $500,000.
Right.
And one of the reasons, I think the bills were only $15,000, and one of the reasons is because he had to carry laundry up, and she couldn't perform her wifely duties, just all these ridiculous things.
Right.
And I was hoping maybe you could look into it, or maybe your other callers could help you with that. But I thought it needed to be addressed because it's, I'm telling you, this guy, Rick Santorum, living in Pittsburgh, as I do, there are more rumors that are so disgusting and sick that I swear he is more Hitler reincarnate than anyone. I mean, he has more potential.
Well, he's pretty toxic. He's pretty toxic. I wouldn't go so far as to, I think, these days call anybody Hitler reincarnated, but pretty toxic. Pretty toxic. Jesse,
well,
thanks a lot
toxic,
for the call.
Yeah. Hey, check out James McMurtry's song, We Can't Make It Here Anymore. Awesome.
Okay.
You'll love it.
Well, I'll pass it along. Okay. Thanks a lot,
Thank
Jesse.
You.
Great to hear from you. Appreciate it. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. I thought I'd just kind of check in this morning about 10:30. I put my This Vet Supports the Troops, Bring Them Home T-shirt on, and I went down to the local Vietnam or the Veterans Day Memorial with a flyer that I created based on the Disabled American Vets press release from yesterday of calling the Veterans Day outrage an insult to all that have fought, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Was able to distribute about 150 flyers, got not one negative comment.
Wow.
Not
and
one.
It sure would have been different a year and a half ago.
And I was handing them, I said, they didn't know what I was handing them. I said, here's the latest way they're screwing us.
Yeah.
And
that's amazing.
Don't surprise me. And I made a few comments. You know, you're not going to hear this on Limbaugh's show or this or that. and I have several good links and whatnot. So at least, you know, getting some of the word out. I had some of the Democrats that knew me, you know, and whatnot. Got a few attaboys and a few pat on the backs, which made me feel good.
Yeah.
But more importantly was getting it in the hands of people that are predisposed to believe these liars.
Yeah.
And
well done,
Roy. And that are directly affected by their mistaken beliefs.
Yeah.
And they're living.
I got to say, they are. Roy, well done, and happy Veterans Day to you.
You know,
thanks for calling and sharing
that with us. Take care. That Ohio thing again. Man, we just got to take our country back.
Yeah, I agree. There you go.
There is a song about that.
There is. I'll play it again. Dave in Eureka, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. A caller about a half hour ago shared my concerns and my conclusions about 9/11. You asked a couple of questions of him that I wanted to speak to. You asked him, who benefited from the events of 9/11? And you also asked him, would they not have had their new Pearl Harbor just with the damage done by the planes?
That's the larger issue, because I think those are really two separate questions.
They are.
You know, there's no doubt in my mind that, go ahead.
The Bush administration has used that day in every way that they possibly could to take away our freedoms, to implement the Patriot Acts 1 and 2. They twisted it to use it to justify invasions that they had already been planning. So they did benefit from it. And the reason that the buildings had to come down was twofold. They had to destroy all the evidence, and that became obvious the way they handled it even after it collapsed. And two, I'm losing my thought here, but that was the primary one. They needed to destroy the evidence. They couldn't have people roaming around and checking things. And it also brought a lot of fear and brought a lot of world support for their invasions.
Yeah, and what's so amazing, Dave, and what's so tragic about the whole thing is that after 9/11, I mean, regardless of how it happened, how it came about, who did it, whatever, I mean, you just set all that aside. After 9/11, in the days, the weeks after 9/11, we had the whole world with us. We had the whole world saying, hey, we're with you, and actually opposed to whoever did that. You know, if it was Osama bin Laden or whatever. And Bush has squandered even that. We now have the whole world upset with us. It's 27 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
The fact is that they tell you lies, that they'd get different names, like collateral damage. The fact is that the dead, they all had different plans. They all had names and faces, hopes and dreams. The fact is, war solves nothing, makes a lot of people dead, and a few rich people happy. Stop the war.
There you go, 34 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Proposition I, also known as the College Not Campus Initiative, this in California, in San Francisco, actually, has worked up Bill O'Reilly. We'll get to that in just a second. I just want to do a little bit here about peace. Today is November 11th. In addition to being my 33rd wedding anniversary, hey, Louise, thanks for 33 great years, and I love you. 33, really, truly, we got married at 11/11. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. We got married on the 11th minute after the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month, as was the armistice signed for World War I. So I guess it was a good time. But in any case, today was referred to as Peace Day throughout the world from 1918 until 1938. In 1938, it became known as Armistice Day, and then in 1954, Dwight Eisenhower changed the name from Armistice Day to Veterans Day, because there had been two wars for which there had been armistices, which had been ended, and it just no longer seemed appropriate. So I want to talk about peace, and I want to bring Jack Kennedy into the conversation. I have Lamar Waldron and I wrote a book about Jack Kennedy and his assassination, which will be released next week. It's called Ultimate Sacrifice, and talking about Kennedy and his plans for Cuba and, you know, what was going on in the Kennedy administration and who killed Jack Kennedy and how and why. And I realize that sounds, people go, uh-oh, that's the ultimate conspiracy theory, right? This is actually a very, very solid book. We'll be talking about it next week. But I want to bring Jack Kennedy to this conversation, too. But first, the opposite side, the right-wing nutcase side. Proposition 1 was known as the College Not Combat Initiative. It does not ban the military from recruiting soldiers on campus. Does not ban it. In fact, if anything banned the military from recruiting soldiers on campus, that would cause schools to lose federal funding. What it does is it encourages school officials. This from a headline here in MTV, actually, an MTV headline. It encourages school officials to offer students alternatives to the perks that come with military service, such as scholarships and job training. In other words, if we're going to let the military come in and recruit and say, hey, how'd you like a job? We'll give you money. You know, see the world. You also have to say, and by the way, here's other things available to you when you graduate from high school. You can get a scholarship to college. You can get job training. There are other programs. So Proposition I, College Not Combat Initiative, passes in California, and Bill O'Reilly goes absolutely insane.
Hey, you know, if you want to ban military recruiting, fine.
No.
But I'm not going to give you another nickel of federal money.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm the President of the United States, I walk right in to Union Square, I set up my little presidential podium, and I say, listen, citizens of San Francisco, if you vote against military recruiting, you're not going to get another nickel in federal funds. Fine. You want to be your own country? Go right ahead. And if Al-Qaeda comes in here and blows you up, we're not going to do anything about it. We're going to say, look, every other place in America is off limits to you except San Francisco. You want to blow up the Koi Tower? Go ahead.
Over. Gone. Gone. Somebody get that guy with a tranquilizer gun quick. Where's the vet? He needs to be talking to Limbaugh about meds. I'm telling you, they need to be sharing some pharmaceuticals, I think. Now, the flip side of that coin is peace. And let's hear from a statesman about peace.
I have therefore chosen this time and place to discuss a topic on which ignorance too often abounds and the truth too rarely perceived. And that is the most important topic on earth, peace.
This is Jack Kennedy speaking in 1962 at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan.
What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace. The kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living. The kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time.
Isn't it amazing? This is Jack Kennedy. He was speaking, actually, in the city where I lived in 1962, and actually I lived in Lansing. He was speaking in East Lansing, and he lived in the city where my wife lived, actually, at the time. And speaking of peace, now Dennis Kucinich comes out. He talks about, let's talk about peace. Let's have a Department of Peace. People go, oh, he's some kind of New Age weirdo. He's talking about peace. This was the President of the United States. The President of the United States talking about peace.
I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears, but we have no more urgent task.
We have no more urgent task, says Jack Kennedy.
No government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered as lacking in virtue.
Now that's a pretty amazing thing to say. No government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered to be lacking in virtue. In other words, you can't just write people off by saying they're evil, George W. Bush. Sorry, we're all humans here. People have problems, people have issues, people have troubles. You don't just say, oh, they're evil. I mean, this is the absolute, this is from a statesman. the absolute antithesis of George W. Bush.
Either with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
And I just, you know, I got to play that one little clip again of Jack Kennedy one more time. Just
no government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered as lacking in virtue.
And then he continues speaking about peace.
Our military forces are committed to peace and disciplined in self-restraint. Our diplomats are instructed to avoid unnecessary irritants and purely rhetorical hostility.
Now, by purely rhetorical hostility, he's speaking of things like John Bolton calling Kim Jong-il names while we're trying to negotiate with him. Remember when that happened? John Bolton was in charge of negotiations with North Korea, and he calls Kim Jong-il a pygmy? And all of a sudden, Kim Jong-il is like, hey, I'm not going to talk to you guys anymore. Come on, grow up, guys. We have an administration full of adolescent jocks.
For we can seek a relaxation of tensions without relaxing our guard. And for our part, we do not need to use threats to prove we are resolute.
No, Jack Kennedy didn't. And the demonstration of resolution, I mean, go back and watch the movie about the Cuban Missile Crisis. Absolutely extraordinary. But anyhow, Jack Kennedy talking about peace. He continues in his speech.
Meanwhile, we seek to strengthen the United Nations to help solve its financial problems, to make it a more effective instrument for peace.
Now we have, who is our representative in the United Nations? Oh, geez. It's that guy who was calling Kim Jong-il the pygmy? Oh.
To develop it into a genuine world security system, a system capable of resolving disputes on the basis of law, of ensuring the security of the large and the small, and of creating conditions under which arms can finally be abolished.
Jack Kennedy, a statesman firmly committed to the idea of peace and absolutely willing to speak about it out loud. This is how he wrapped up his speech at Michigan State University back in 1962.
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war. We do not want a war. We do not now expect a war. This generation of Americans has already had enough, more than enough, of war and hate and oppression. We shall be prepared if others wish it. We shall be alert to try to stop it. But we shall also do our part to build a world of peace where the weak are safe and the strong are just. We are not helpless before that task or hopeless of its success. Confident and unafraid, we must labor on, not towards a strategy of annihilation, but towards a strategy of peace.
But towards a strategy of peace. We are not helpless before that task. When I listen to this, when I listen to Jack Kennedy or Dwight Eisenhower, when I listen, a Democrat and a Republican, I've played both of them today for you, and you listen to these people who were really and truly, they believed in the ability of government to be a positive force in the world, to bring about peace, to draw together people, to make life better. And then you see, ever since Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party having been captured by people who say that government is in and of itself inherently evil. And how can you govern if you believe that government is evil? How can you govern if you don't believe in government? And we're seeing the results of that. With these, you know, slashing budgets for programs that actually benefit people and cutting taxes for multimillionaires and billionaires and fighting for wars in foreign lands that we really don't need and we certainly don't want. And, you know, making a few people billionaires in the process. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's no other way to say it. We've been
lied to and misled into another senseless war. How many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare and revive the American dream? If we blindly stay the course, this horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way.
And welcome back. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio, the Tom Hartman radio program, fair and slightly unbalanced. It's the end of the week. Special thanks this week, and by the way, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, happy Friday, happy weekend to you, and special thanks to Louise, to David Poole, Louise and David producing this program, to Shelby and Ben for streaming us on RadioPower.org, CRN Digital, WhiteRoseSociety.org, to Alex Goldmark and Dan Jacobs at Air America Radio, and you can also pick up our stream at AirAmericaRadio.com, to Mike Toth for our archives, to Sue and the folks in our chat room, our affiliates, our advertisers, and to you for listening. Special thanks to all of you. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. Trey in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Trey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I want to make three quick points.
Sure.
In reference to what Kennedy was just saying, and another one about Veterans Day. It seems to me that, like, in this day, the Republicans, you know, they pretty much control the dialogue, and they have made everything about the military. Even
yeah.
though, you know, we honor our troops and everything, but you hear people say all the time that the troops are like fighting for our freedoms and all our freedoms. The freedoms we enjoy come from the soldiers. And I don't necessarily think that that's the case in a lot of ways because, you know, like the abolitionists fought in slavery. They weren't the troops. A lot of, like, the workers' rights and stuff came from unions. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that citizens do as well that never gets pointed out.
Yeah, the vast majority of our freedoms did not come about as a result of warfare. They came about as a result of nonviolent action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see that's a two-way thing. It's like the military goes overseas and you know, they go to war and stuff to try and defend the country. We, it's our duty as citizens to dissent, you know, and speak out against the government when the government does wrong or when the government takes advantage of the troops, because the troops pretty much, you know, their job is to follow orders and, you know, serve when
yeah.
they're called.
Yeah,
so
and
speak out for them.
Yeah, I agree with you, Trey. Well said. Well
okay.
said. And anybody in the military, and thanks for the call. Anybody in the military will tell you, you know, the job of a soldier is to, you know, kill people and blow things up. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, there are times when that's actually necessary, tragically. But the job of the military is not to spread democracy, it's to defend democracy, and there's a big difference. Nick in Bayville, New Jersey. Hey, Nick, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Going back to something that was covered earlier with the a lot of the Democrats coming out now and saying, oh, if I know what I know now, I wouldn't have voted the way I voted. I find that so completely disingenuous. I'm retired military, you know, today being Veterans Day, and just even before the war, all you had to do was go to a quick search, go to the CIA.gov sites or James Military, and you would see that Iraq was a complete nothing. Here's a country that couldn't defend its own airspace, that had no Navy, no Air Force, no nothing. Its neighbors weren't screaming bloody murder, and all of a sudden it was going to be a threat to the most powerful nation in history. So I really have a hard time with these guys. All of a sudden, oh, if we know what we know now, we never would have voted that way.
Well, Nick, I don't disagree with you entirely, and I think that there were a lot of Democrats who basically spinelessly rolled over, and probably some who actually even thought, you know, this war is going to turn out pretty good for us, and if we can make this war happen and we voted in favor of it, then we'll share in the glory. But on the other hand, we have discussed this with several members of Congress. I think Bernie was one of the most articulate about it. He didn't believe the briefings, but he said that they were taken in, as I recall. Actually, I shouldn't put these words in Bernie's mouth because I'm not sure which member of Congress specifically said this on this program. We'd have to go back and look at the archives. But, you know, said that basically the members of Congress were taken into private closed-door meetings with, you know, people from the Department of Defense and the administration. The Bushies, and told really scary things. You know, we're going to tell you even more than we're telling the American people, and really scary things about Saddam Hussein. So I think, you know, some of them might have actually bought the lie. So when Bush says, you know, Democrats believed there were weapons, really what he's saying is Democrats believed my lies. And I think we need to see through that and catch that. Nick, thanks a lot for the call. Good point you make. Jackie, we've got about 60 seconds left. Hey, what's up? Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was just, I'm really concerned and disturbed about the pre-election newspaper polls in Ohio being totally opposite to the final results. And I think
just on the three issues that had to do with electronic voting machines, but
yeah. This is an excellent reason to have a holiday for voting where everybody's off work. They vote at the polls, not via mail, and then you can have exit polls to double check the results. And I'm just wondering what we can do about this disturbing situation.
Well, all we can do right now, Jackie, is spread the word as loudly and as far and as wide as we can. And by the way, check out Mark Crispin Miller's new book, Fooled Again, because it's entirely about the 2004 election. We're going to have him on as a guest on Monday's program. And it's shocking, you know, about what happened in the 2004 election. But, Jackie, you raise a really good and important point, a really good and important point. Carol in Seattle, just a few seconds left. Hey, Carol.
Hey, I'm concerned about the same thing, and I'm just wondering, is there a prosecutor out there in Ohio who is willing to take on this problem of vote fraud?
Now, well, here's the problem, Carol. You have to have evidence. And with electronic voting machine that has no paper trail, it's all on the memory cards. And if the memory cards are corrupted or if by now they've been erased, there's no trail it's possible to prosecute against.
Sure, there isn't. But if with a little bit of research, anybody can find out what happened in Florida. Prosecutor can go and talk to Bev Harris.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you at all, Carol. You're spot on. You're spot on. And it's not going to happen until enough of us start making a lot of noise about it. We got a packed show for you on Monday. Mark Crispin Miller is going to be with us. He's going to talk about this very issue, how they stole the 2004 election. Jeffrey Feldman from Frame Shop is open. He's going to be talking about the so-called ticking bomb frame about national security and torture. And remember, activism starts with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.